a la policía cuando mataron a mi hijo. Está el video, sin embargo, no han querido investigar. Había las luces de una patrulla en el momento que asesinan a mi hijo y la Procuraduría no quería investigar. Ni siquiera la Comisión de Derechos ha hecho una investigación para aclarar esto. Pues es claro que están coludidos tanto Perla como Mancera para que este tipo de asesinatos, este tipo de casos políticos no se investiguen.
¡Carlos Sinue vive! ¡La lucha sigue! ¡Presos políticos! ¡Libertad!
En el documento donde rechazan la permanencia de Perla Gómez como presidente de la Comisión de Derechos Humanos, afirman que la Ciudad de México se merece una instancia que realmente vele por los derechos humanos de los ciudadanos y que deje de obedecer a la consigna del poder. De nuevo, Alejandro Lugo, uno de los 500 exdetenidos arbitrariamente en la Ciudad de México entre el 2012 y el 2015.
Las deficiencias de esta comisión tienen que ver principalmente con la atención a víctimas, con la atención psicosocial, con el despido injustificado de personas claves, de trabajadores de esta comisión que han documentado los abusos por parte de la Secretaría de Seguridad Pública, de la Procuraduría y de la Secretaría de Gobierno en contra de movimientos sociales, violentando principalmente marchas y manifestaciones en la Ciudad de México del 2012 a la fecha.
Recientemente, 29 consejeros y exconsejeros de la comisión pidieron a la Asamblea Legislativa elegir a un candidato o candidata que ayude a recuperar el piso mínimo de credibilidad del organismo defensor de derechos humanos en la capital mexicana.
Legisladores estadounidenses aprobaron el miércoles dejar intacto el permiso al presidente para lo que algunos llaman la guerra permanente. Elena Villar amplía la información.
Han pasado casi 16 años desde que el Congreso estadounidense autorizara una respuesta militar a los ataques del 11 de septiembre del año 2001, pero la amenaza y, por tanto, la respuesta a ella continúa. Es lo que se desprende de lo sucedido este miércoles. El Senado ha votado en contra de una enmienda introducida por el senador Rand Paul en la que pedía poner fin a dos leyes de guerra. Concretamente son las llamadas autorizaciones para el uso de la fuerza militar, una aprobada en 2001 como respuesta a esos atentados y la otra en 2002 para autorizar la guerra de Irak. La enmienda rechazada buscaba como objetivo forzar un debate sobre los poderes de guerra que el presidente debe tener hoy día, puesto que esas dos leyes le garantizan decisiones prácticamente sin límite. El senador republicano había asegurado antes de la votación: lo que tenemos hoy en día es básicamente guerra, una guerra ilimitada en cualquier lugar, en cualquier momento y en cualquier lugar del mundo. No creo que nadie con una pizca de honestidad intelectual crea que estas autorizaciones permiten las guerras actuales en las que luchamos en 7 países. Paul también ha remarcado que su enmienda lo que supone es que por primera vez en todo este tiempo se debata el papel del Congreso en las declaraciones de guerra. Ha apuntado: esto supone dar poder a los legisladores, un poder que ahora mismo no está en sus manos. La propuesta de Paul en concreto lo que buscaba era derogar esas dos leyes en 6 meses y dar tiempo a los legisladores para considerar una nueva o no. El debate ha resultado enconado, puesto que ha enfrentado a diversas facciones del Partido Republicano. Paul es republicano, pero el líder de la mayoría republicana en el Senado incluso le ha llamado irresponsable porque aseguran que los enemigos de Estados Unidos todavía siguen ahí. Hay que recordar que la cuestión, la polémica ha existido prácticamente desde el año 2015, cuando el presidente Barack Obama ya en su día pidió al Congreso que reemplazara esa autorización de fuerza militar pasada la lucha contra Al-Qaeda con una nueva diseñada específicamente para el Estado Islámico. No sucedió entonces, tampoco sucede ahora. Por 61 votos a favor y 36 en contra, la guerra eterna sigue en Estados Unidos.
Era Elena Villar reportando sobre el militarismo creciente bajo la llamada guerra contra el terrorismo por Estados Unidos. Y concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV, de Venezolana de Televisión y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Toshkri y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a former Clear Channel radio engineer, and when I'm in Santa Cruz, I listen to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
And next up on Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, it's, of course, your favorite show, Thursday evenings, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Today is, of course, September 14th, 2017. We're going to be hearing special reports, some of them rather gloomy, from the Santa Cruz Shitty Council. mispronunciation intentional, around the issue of the stay-away orders that passed again, unfortunately, but surprisingly only by a narrow 4-3 margin. There will also be interviews with Food Not Bombs activists, marijuana activist Pat Malo, and surprisingly enough, Police Chief Andy Mills. So don't go away and stay.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And hello, everybody. This is Robert Norse, and welcome to another evening edition of Bathrobus Pierre's Broadsides. As usual, unfortunately, we still have no call-in number, but if you have any comments on the show, want more information about free radio, want to help in civil rights struggles around homeless issues, you can give a call to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, at 423-HUFF. That's 423-HUF, 423-4833. Free Radio Santa Cruz can also be indirectly reached through that number in case you want to apply for the $500 reward, which we are still offering in case you come up with a place that we can go rent for a year, or any part of a year, for that matter. You get a smaller amount proportionate to the amount of time we can stay. Also go to the freakradio.org website, where you can catch somewhat updated schedules of our shows and some archives of other shows. My shows are found on the HUF website at huffsantacruz.org under the name of the show, which is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, where you can also catch the show if you missed it by clicking on the link Latest Shows. And you wouldn't want to miss any one of my exciting shows, so that's the place where you can go. There was a city council meeting on Tuesday, a long one, that began at noon and was postponed for half an hour to deal with the fire department's awarding of an honor to a guy who died of cancer this summer, a firefighter. and then resumed again, went on for hours and hours. And there were some items on the agenda which you regular listeners who may have heard the last couple of shows may know interested me anyway, that had to do with the final nail in the coffin that brought us the stay-away order expansion. Also, the marijuana ordinance proposed changes for recreational marijuana, also impacting medical marijuana. The update on the syringe situation based on a grand jury report. And then finally, the unreasonably disturbing noise ordinance, which was coming up for a first reading. The last three, I'm not going to have much on until Sunday, if I have anything on them then, though I hope to be able to review the city council meeting online, which, of course, anyone can do. You can't reach the video at this moment, but if you click on audios of city council meetings, you can reach the September 12th meeting, or the audio of it, that way. In fact, that's what I'm going to play for you next, which is the audio of the stay-away expansion that happened, sadly, on Tuesday, as well as some of the outraged responses from four members of the audience, of which I was one. Good thing to be said about that whole thing, if it is a good thing in any meaningful, deep, or continuing way, is that Mayor Cynthia Chase surprisingly joined the opposition to the stay-away law, but on the downside, very few of the meaningful arguments raised by critics were presented by the opposition, and there was also no exploding of the myths that Vice Chair Terrasas, Vice Mayor Terrasas, David Terrasas, whose public hysteria, or safety as he calls it, subcommittee of City Council brought us this trash, as well as, well, there wasn't much testimony from anybody at this second session. They did the done deal 3 weeks ago when the City Council had a previous first reading of this ordinance. But you, if you stay tuned at 7 o'clock, I'm hoping to have on the response of Andy Mills, who's the new Santa Cruz Police Department chief, taking the place of former police chief Kevin. I didn't know there was an ICE agent in the bushes, Vogel, who retired in May or thereabouts. And we haven't gotten any response yet from Mills, to whom I sent a letter regarding what's the real deal regarding the ICE agent, how long was he there for, in terms of who knew about it, what was the nature of the deal, what kind of communications did you have with DHS and ICE. And, of course, those are organizations concerned with the repression of undocumented aliens and the breaking up of families, the deportation of people who do not have the papers, that sort of thing. That is, instead of dealing with real crimes and real problems, they help to remove what are often hardworking people from this country. Not that hardworking is necessarily such a good thing, mind you, but for all of you conservatives out there, that's what they do. Well, guns and jail and ethnic discrimination being the watchword. Was hoping to give an update on the MHCAN, that's a Mental Health Clients Action Network struggle. But unfortunately, the people around that struggle, whether it's the board of directors or the executive director, are all closed-mouthed in terror that they will, I don't know, slip something that will upset their legal case, although I'm not aware they're in court at all. But they have a planning commission hearing that's coming up on the 28th. I put in a Public Records Act request to try to determine just what the Planning Commission has communicated in the past with other agencies, what supposedly are the complaints against MHCAN that resulted in the severe reduction of their services a couple years ago, and police surveillance a couple years ago intensely. But I can't get a peep out of the actual officials who are supposedly guiding MHCAN, which is really sad. And some people feel that they're hogbound by their attorneys, perhaps, their attorney. Others praise the attorney as a wonderful disability attorney. But, of course, if you can't speak truth to the general population, I don't know how the hell you're going to mobilize support. And that is exactly what has been missing in the last 3 years with MH Can. And it's had bad effects on the clients as well, because the director, Sarah Leonard, has at different times, according to clients, felt required to crack down in order to appease the repressive forces around her, whether it's repression from the board above her or the police outside lurking around or the neighbors. And instead of, you know, fighting back and standing up on this issue, you know, I understand it's a strategic or perhaps they might say a tactical or both choice. It seems to me to be the wrong one. But then again, that's from a person whose lodging and friends are not being threatened with funding cutoffs. And they're, of course, really maybe the nub of it, that allowing funding to be the final word can ultimately destroy the self-determination of the group, and probably already has, but who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Folks interested could still go into the planning department or contact them. You can make your own Public Records Act request. I suggested that different folks do that. I got some timid response from a board member. Oh, we've asked the attorney to do that. You know, that's not going to be terribly helpful. Attorneys have their own way of proceeding and their own methodology, and it doesn't involve much community activism often. It involves a legal strategy, which may involve muffling community activism. So in any case, I have no report on the MH Can struggles. I've tried to reach Steve Plaich repeatedly on this. He's the chair of the board of directors, another one of those chair-warming activities that he's been so involved with the last 4 or 5 years, garnering little, I must say degrees, but I don't know, board chair titles in front of his name, and, you know, running for political office and all this kind of crap, which I really feel should be beneath him ultimately. And he's been doing other things too, and so he doesn't get entirely black marks on my book. But I don't know that he's been doing too much recently. I mean, Occupy is already 6 years in the past, and his attempt to help there, again, he conceives himself in a leadership role all the time. Maybe I do too, who knows. But in any case, at least I'm not trying to get on the cozy up to other board members and city officials and all that kind of shit, which I don't really think ultimately is helpful if your main constituency is the people that they are oppressing. That's the wrong direction to go in. But Steve does run a thing called the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project. I have no idea how effective it's been lately. If anybody has any reports on that, call in and tell me, 423-4833, 423-4833. I'd like to get a report on if you've been successfully helped by Steve Plaich. Let's give the man some credit, for God's sake. I was curious what the board of directors of the ACLU, you know, that's the American Civil Liberties Union, but not for Nazis, has been working on. And I had to throw that one in because I really think that's a very bad choice not to defend the rights of anyone who's harassed by the police and not to stand up for the right to demonstrate in spite of repression by city officials. The ACLU made similar bad choice regarding communists in the 30s. It took them decades to get past that one. Now here we are again. It's a matter of, not a matter of the First Amendment. The First Amendment doesn't require organizations to do anything. It just requires the government not to pass laws restricting speech, press, assembly, freedom of religion, or freedom from religion, or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and petition the government for a redress of their grievances. But it does, free speech does is an issue if you believe in, for example, the right of people to speak freely even if they have unpopular views and not be punished for it, like, say, fired from their job or beaten on the streets or have their signs torn away from them, however much you feel they are expressing views that suck the big weenie. Now, if there's some other thing against them, if they actually are burning crosses on people's lawns and threatening people physically or even verbally in a very specific way, that's another matter. But that has to do with individual responsibility, not a group that's doing a demonstration. That's my problem. That's my problem with the whole hate speech stuff. But my real issue with the ACLU locally is its failure to pick up the cudgels for poor people here. There's been more representation on the ACLU in recent years. Abby Samuels, Steve Plage, she's a vice chair of the ACLU. A couple of other folks have joined the ACLU who are sympathetic but often don't make it to the meetings. Peter Gelblum is still the president, and he sounds a lot more sympathetic, but then he doesn't do anything, or at least I've not seen what he's done. And the suggestions I put forward, ranging from press conferences to speaking at least as an individual at city council against such things as the stay-away law, he has no apparently interest in doing, or maybe no time to do it, or who knows what the situation is. But I have no report from on that today because Steve Plage is not answering his phone, but he has assured me on his answering machine he will be getting back to me at the earliest opportunity. Sometimes he does, and if that happens in the course of this recording, we'll learn more. Positive thing to report that attorney Tristia Bauman, who is with the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, and who came to town amid great fanfare in the winter of 2015, December of 2015, in a Freedom Sleepers benefit, and announced she was going to prepare to try to get a lawsuit together to stop the repression of people under the sleeping ban or perhaps having their property seized. She has contacted me by email, having gotten wind of the fact that finally, after years, in spite of my forwarding all the public records I get on when I finally can wrestle them from the police department and Parks and Rec and other agencies regarding the attack on homeless people and the homeless advocates who support them. She's finally sent me an email saying she wants those in more detail, and she's very interested and so forth. And there has been an effort by Abby Samuels at Food Not Bombs and some other activists to sign people up a few weeks ago in hopes, ultimately, of getting a lawsuit. But they've assured me, you know, to be very clear, that they don't have any lawsuit written up, prepared, even on the horizon. So I have no report from the ACLU at the moment on this issue, although I think they had a board of directors meeting last night, Wednesday night. I think it's once a month. Well, let's begin with the September 12th Santa Cruz City Council meeting, that section of the meeting that dealt with item 14, which was supposed to come up around 12:30 or 1. I staggered into City Council and collapsed on a bench waiting for that to happen, keeping my eye on the both sides of the room to see if the police were going to attempt to remove my audio recorder, as I was threatened with at the last council meeting 3 weeks before, apparently under direction from, it's hard to say who it came from. I've been accusing poor Bren Lehr and that, but it could have been somebody else. But there was no such thing that happened at this meeting. I want to cheerfully, or at least with a certain amount of relief and exhaustion, report that there was no attempt to seize the little recorder that I put up near the podium, even though that is an explicit violation of the rules created in 2000, 17 years ago, by a hostile mayor who was running away from his promise to open emergency shelter for the homeless in the winter and the sleeping ban and restore some civil rights for the homeless, and did not like it when we raised these issues loudly, particularly since he was a Green Party member. That's Tim Fitzmaurice. And so he created this law unilaterally, just initiated it as mayor. It wasn't a law, it's a city council policy, that if you're going to record, you have to be physically in possession of the recorder, and it has to be with you at all times, as though somehow it would be abusive or dangerous or disruptive to have a little machine sitting there when you, while you go and examine the agenda or go to the bathroom or go outside, as I might do, to interview somebody. And I was arrested for violating this city council rule in 2014 by then Mayor Lynn Robinson. Of course, it didn't go anywhere, this case, and the charge never reached the court. But, you know, it stopped me from attending the council meeting. And I've talked about this before on the council. I apologize to people who have heard it too many times, but perhaps it, I don't know if it doesn't need to be said again. Violating a city council rule that the council has laid down, provided you are not actually disrupting the meeting, that is, say, stopping the flow of business, or violating the law in some way, is itself not a disruption of a council meeting. Which, and the reason that's relevant is because that's what city council members will arrest you for, or at least that's what I was arrested for years ago, and again in 2014, once for raising my arm in a mock Nazi salute when the council repressed one of the speakers, and I was silent about it. I didn't shout. I just quietly did that, indicating that I felt they were acting like fascists. And then another time when I simply tried to keep recording by leaving my machine in the place where I felt it provided the best audio of the meeting. These actions disrupted the meeting. What disrupted the meeting was the action of the chair. In one case, Chris Krohn, who was mayor in 2002 and during the Nazi salute brouhaha. And in the other case, Lynn Robinson, who was mayor in 2014, who had me, who just stopped their own meeting and had me demanded that I leave the chambers. And I said, no, I won't. This is a council meeting. I'm here to observe, to make notes, to make commentary on the radio. And they had me arrested. So they disrupted their own meeting. But then they tried, the charge they used was disrupting a public meeting. Well, what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found in my case when I sued the city council and they tried to have the suit stopped, it never got to court in terms of any action against me, but I did have attorneys years ago who felt this was a slam-dunk civil liberties case. They have no trouble in getting the courts to rule the city council was way out of line and having a member of the public dragged away for a simple expression of dissent. But they were wrong. Because we had a local judge, white, local in the sense that he's from San Jose, he's a federal judge, who was sympathetic with city authorities. And he kept dismissing my case against the city. Eventually, it got to the highest court, short of the Supreme Court, which is the en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit Court. And they ruled, and they were quite clear about this, that I had a right to take the case to trial because an arrest for disruption has to be for an actual disruption, not a potential disruption, a theoretical disruption, a disruption in the abstract, a violation of the rules. Rather, it has to be a disruption. And that, as far as I know, has not been overturned or changed, in spite of misinformation provided by Chris Krohn himself at the council meeting nearly a month ago when he stood up to insist that I had protested that I was getting threatened with arrest for my recorder. And I pointed out that the council should not allow this. This is during a normal speaking time on a consent agenda item. And that Chris Krohn could advise people of the dangers of trying to arrest someone for disrupting a meeting when they weren't. And Chris then sanctimoniously sort of turned after that was said, when I couldn't respond because that would be disruptive, you see, and said, "Oh, Robert, but you lost that case." And what he meant was that I was unable to get a jury to award me any damages. But the precedent that you cannot have a person arrested for non-disruptive behavior that violates a council rule was not overturned. It was, and it is still, as far as I know, the precedent. And I urge people to use it if they want to bother to go to city council and try to make, to give testimony, if only to talk to the community for that brief period that you're allowed to speak. And again, it was 2 minutes per speaker, generally, at city council at this most recent September 12th meeting. And of course, I do note that Cynthia Chase, the mayor, has given Huff the 5-minute period to speak it requested that any organization can request, both for the first reading of this stay-away nonsense, this really toxic stay-away law expansion, and then also on September 12th when it was returned to City Council for a second and final vote. It will go into effect on October 12th, 30 days later. The issue finally came up around 4:45 in the afternoon, and I'm going to play the audio that the City Council itself made, which covers some of the it covers virtually everything that I need to cover. Some people will say, "Why aren't you happy with City Council audios?" And I'll reiterate for folks what the problem with City Council audios is: one, they sometimes don't appear online in a timely way. Although they have been recently, though not the videos. The video still isn't up yet as of the Thursday afternoon when I'm recording this. They are also interrupted with electronic problems on occasion. That happened numerous occasions, particularly when there were large crowds at City Council. There's also the difficulty that the crew that does the videoing and the audioing turns off the machine when directed to do so by the mayor. So if, for example, they're going to start hassling someone and demand that they leave the room, they may turn off the machine. And they have, in the past, done that. And that means if you want evidence that you're being fucked with at the city council, so in order to defend yourself in court or to persuade authorities to forget about court and behave better, you don't get it unless you make your own recording. I did make my own recording, and I'm going to now play, however, since my recording was not as good as the City Council recording, and I thank City Council authorities for making that available, although it's, I think, a requirement. We shouldn't be thanking them, but if they put energy into it, good. I'm glad they did. They were, I'm sure, pretty well paid for it, too, but I know. Here we go. This is the City Council meeting of Item 14, the stay-away order, which expanded. Well, it'll be explained in probably detail as we proceed, but what it involves is that 300-foot so-called safety zones around schools, where if you get an infraction, then you can also be given a stay-away order, not just for one day, but for 3 days, by the park ranger or police officer. And if any parks are in any way touching these 300-foot zones, then the entire park has a tripled time expansion of stay-away orders. So it'll be 3 days in the park. And that's just not 3 days. If you happen to get another infraction in the next three weeks, actually, anywhere in any other park or area patrolled by the parks, then you get a 3-week stay-away order, both from the park where that happened or the area where that happened and the area where you got the original infraction and stay-away order. And there's a slight caveat to that, which is really only covers the large parks, Moore Creek, the Poganip, and the Arena Gulch. It does not cover San Lorenzo Park because it's not within 300 feet of a school. But San Lorenzo Park, you're going to get a one-day stay-away order the first time, then a one-week stay-away order, then a one-month stay-away order. And I haven't been able to determine how many of these longer stay-away orders have been given. There's also a provision in the law for the city manager who cooked up this law. That's Bumbuster Bernal, Martin Bernal, as I had a better name for him, but that will do at the moment, because a lot of these laws come out of The city man, at least they get approved by the city manager, who is the most powerful and most well-paid official in the city. I never tire of saying that because people can get confused thinking the mayor and the city council are the ultimate authority. And in theory, they should be, but the city manager, the city attorney, the city clerk, city administrator, I guess she's now called, they outlast the city council. They're really there doing the hiring and the firing. They have the real power. They set the agenda. They can be directed to do, and they like to make like they're doing that. But a lot of the decisions are made at the staff level. Whether it's shutting down the mime troupe, which is what Parks and Rec did last year. They wouldn't let them use San Lorenzo Park. And the year before, they tried to do that. This year, they didn't do that, or they were stopped from doing that. I'm not quite sure what the background is on that. And the San Francisco Mime Troupe production of Wall, or is it Walls? I'm not sure which, went forward last weekend. And indeed, you may be able to hear some of that on my Sunday show if you want to tune in. Some errant pirate made a copy of it, and I think it deserves to go further and not just die at the end of the summer. One of my great complaints against the mime troupe is they don't make accessible to the community their shows once their shows have gone away. You can't get recordings generally of their shows. They have them in their vaults. I think they've done 50-odd shows in the last 50 years. But they don't make them available. It may have to do with Screen Actors Guild bullshit, union restrictions, commercial use. But it certainly should be available, I think, if they are truly a group that's concerned with political and social change and justice. I don't want to say revolutionary justice, since that would be carrying things far too far, but in terms of what they actually do. A second problem I have with the mime troupe is they don't deal with local issues. They may have actually had that opportunity given that opportunity to activists in other locations this summer, because there was some indication of that on their program. But our locality did not have any speakers on local issues or any reference to local issues, even though we have one of the most repressive anti-homeless combines going in the state. Andy Mills' pretensions notwithstanding, he's our police chief, I remind you, and I did interview him, and we'll be hearing from him at 7 o'clock. Let's hear now from the Santa Cruz City Council's final zip through of the stay away ordinance, which again, as I've said, essentially allows a police officer on her own discretion to decide to give or not to give a stay-away order with no criteria specified in the law other than the fact that she or he has given the person an infraction, crime citation, which could be anything from something more serious, I don't know, harassing a city official, or I don't even know if that would be considered serious since usually it's the other way around. I don't know. Urinating with the bathroom open within 30 yards in public in front of three children or something. And there was any arrest in a park, ranging to sleeping there at night when you have no place to go, or having a peaceful protest there as well after closing hours. And that's what the overwhelming majority of tickets is for. Violating park hours, sleeping / camping, and also smoking. And there's also a bit of open container involved, which does not mean drunk. It means simply trying to drink a beer or whatever you're drinking. And all these things now suddenly will give you triple stay-away order time if you're in the Poganip, the Arena Gulch, or Moores Creek, or in lots of other smaller areas around Santa Cruz, which is where a lot of homeless people are. And it's going to drive people, of course, into the neighborhoods and create more hostility against the homeless. And there's a lot of phony talk about resources and services that they had at the first meeting where this was brought up. That was one of the few positive things that Chris Krohn said, although he dared not talk about the civil liberties issues. He didn't bother with that. And you'll get to hear me and others raging on from the floor briefly before we get ushered out, but they just simply passed it, and that was that. But it was 4-3, and Chase did change her vote. Well, let's put it this way. I don't know if she changed her vote because she wasn't at the last council meeting. But she may have, she seemed to be, it was considered by many, Brent Adams, particularly when I talked to him a couple of days ago, a sea change at the city council. I don't have that optimistic a view, but let's listen in.
People will be up here.
Yeah. Yeah, I need all the council members to be up here. We actually need to move on to item 14.
I think with four of us, we can do it.
All right, we have a quorum, so here we go.
And now we have Sandy.
All right, continue.
Okay, so we're up. I mean, we have, I think, Scott Collins, we have a second reading of...
This is David Terrazas.
Is there any questions?
So I wasn't here for this item initially when it was read, and it is something that I've brought up before, I think, in previous comments and even in my participation in the Public Safety Committee. And obviously this is something, when we were talking about safety, and particularly for children in parks and open spaces, none of us disagree.
This is Mayor
on
Chase
that. I just
talking.
Want us to
Cynthia
be really
Chase.
Thinking about when we're putting forward ordinances like this, which is not dissimilar at all to our vacating, our order to vacate, that we can inadvertently give the message to the community that we are solving this issue, and we are not. We are, at best, moving around issues into other parts of the community. And so I understand that there is a majority that voted for this already, so it's likely to pass. But I do want us as a council to be really thoughtful about when we're putting things into practice that actually are not targeting the root causes of...
And this speech by Mayor Chase tends to indicate to me that she'd already intended, when she sat down, to vote against this. And I don't know why, really. I haven't talked to her about it. I'm glad she did. She did have a brief conversation with me last week when I brought to her attention that she hadn't fulfilled certain promises she made 4 months ago when I did an interview with her and played it on free radio. And she still hasn't quite done that yet. And I have yet to muster my energy to review the entire interview that I did with her to specify exactly what those promises were. Some of them had to do with opening up bathrooms, and she was going to get the city manager, Bernal, to, and this was when the Freedom Sleepers were still sleeping, to open the bathrooms at the city hall during the day when they were normally open. And I'm not aware she did this, and I wanted her to make sure she would make a public statement that this is something she thinks should be done. She hasn't done that, as far as I know. And so I wanted to make sure that she was still consciously intending to carry on with an inhumane, contrary to public health, clearly politically abusive attack on the poorest population and demonizing them. Well, what she's saying here when she says that this is not a solution to the homeless problem, these stay-away orders, it's rather obvious, for sure, but she's kind of saying, I think she's trying to talk to the city council majority. The four votes, Rochelle Naroyan, Maxine Watkins, Cynthia Matthews, and David Terrazas, that this is the community should be aware that this is not some sort of solution at all. And that, in a way, it may be regarded as a kind of backhanded criticism of the majority, if you want to look at it in the most positive light. You know, because that's, you're going to hear Terrazas fulminating, or, he isn't really fulminating, he's very mild and mellow in how he speaks, very sincere and very kind of temperate. And that's what makes it so kind of awful, because he's saying things that are, fundamentally lies and misleading statements, like we have to have a set of standards in the parks, as though there was some, as though these the stay away orders were used to establish standards that actually were something that the community was concerned about, like not being there after dark. Why would the community be concerned about that? Well, it's unlawful. No, it,
That's not a good enough reason. City Council can make all kinds of laws. The question is whether it reflects the community standard. And, of course, in this case, it has to do with homeless behavior and giving the police more tools to deal with situations on an ad hoc basis as things come up. Oh, we can order this guy away if we want. We don't have to wait for a court. We don't have to, he doesn't have to violate a law. These are bad avenues to take, and it's misleading to talk about community standards, rules of conduct, standards of behavior, when the behavior you're talking about has to do with survival behavior, like sleeping or being in a park as a place, particularly the Poganip, let's say, to sleep after dark. When you look at the record of all the past infractions and stayaways in the last few years, and I haven't been able to look at it the recent stuff, although I have recently gotten it, and thanks to the, gotten some of it. I haven't gotten a key part of it, which is to indicate what the addresses of these folks are so that you can tell if they're homeless or not. It has major impact on homeless people, but the so-called crimes are these petty infractions which don't have anything to do with really hurting other people. They're simply pretexts for driving the homeless on and maybe giving a little political brouhaha. Hey, we're rounding up the prostitutes. I'm not saying this is prostitution. It's similar to the election eve rounding up of prostitutes that reportedly was done in big cities before elections as a kind of woo-woo, vote for us kind of tool. Now, there's no vote this year, but that's the kind of thing that it feels like to me. I will try to interrupt less and let you hear more from the Santa Cruz City Council.
These issues, and I do know that we have many policies that we're looking at from our work plan, as well as our Homelessness Coordinating Committee recommendations, and including the Public Safety Committee that's actually really looking at what we should be focusing on for this next year that are targeting root causes. I really want us to be focusing on policies that are really addressing those things so that we can see some sustainable changes rather than just focusing on displacement or basically moving issues around. So I just wanted to contribute that. I know this is the second reading, and like I said, there's likely council support for this, but I think it's important that we think about these policy implications.
Moving issues around. She doesn't even dare to say moving people around who are poor and homeless and have no place to go. Doesn't want to talk candidly because why offend the people in the neighborhoods who just don't want to have to look in the mirror and say, we're not just moving an issue or a behavior problem around, we're moving a human being around. I mean, that makes them feel bad. You don't want those upper middle class and middle class voters to feel bad. And you want to give us something to feel good about, like the fact that you're, enforcing things and making people follow the law. And maybe that will somehow give some people some jobs somewhere who are losing their jobs or are about to lose their homes or, don't have rental space. Anyway, it seems to me that she's using language just as the rest of the council does. It does not, you're not going to hear the H word used much at all, homeless, during this discussion.
And the messages that we're giving to the community, because if folks are thinking that this is going to solve the issue, it is not.
I'd like to add, because I mean, there was some discussion.
David Chirazes,
the police chief, came up and kind of mentioned this as well during the discussions. I mean, we do not manage health and human services, right? But we do need to maintain certain standards throughout the community in terms of our public spaces, especially near kids. So I appreciate your comments, but I do think that there's other venues to kind of take those on, too. There are issues that are going on. That doesn't mean we don't, standards of behavior in really sensitive areas where kids are present.
And, of course, this is part of why I am so sick of Chirazes and even angry with him. Kids are not the main protected situation here in this ordinance, because the 300-foot zones largely, any of those that are around schools are a small minority of the territory that's actually covered. The main territory that's covered is far away from schools. It's in the Poganip, the Arena Gulch, and in Moores Creek. And they didn't have to do this, but they did. They could have said we could only have the swath of the park of each of these three places that's within 300 feet. But they didn't do that. Instead, they said, oh, here's a good excuse to make this and get the entire park a tripled time zone where you get
three times as long a stay away order without even benefit of going to a court, without even benefit of having a guilty hearing, a guilty plea after a hearing and a trial. Standards. Again, he uses that phrase, which I'm just sick of hearing from him, because we aren't talking about, if you're talking about people being hurt or abused, yes, those are definitely standards we want to enforce, or we want at least people to follow. But not to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, not to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night, not to raise a tent during wet weather, not to be in a park after dark when there's no other places to go, really, if you're in the city, for the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. This is, it has to be, after Terrazas's 4 or 5 years, I don't know how long, maybe 6 years now on the council, intentional deception on his part, or else willful ignorance. I can't quite figure out what it is. Probably should arrange an interview with it. Maybe I'll do that. Although it hardly seems worth it.
And so I just want to make sure that we don't blanket any sort of action to try and make at least progress on creating certain standards in our community and say that we shouldn't do anything at this time. Because clearly there are issues that need to be addressed, and some of the solutions may take much longer than others. But that doesn't mean we don't do anything.
And again, what issues is he talking about? 3 weeks ago, there was no stats provided of the particular kind of crimes that had to be dealt with within 300 feet of schools. There were a couple of anecdotal claims, and one or two terror stories were presented by the Take Back Santa Cruz crew and the Rochelle Noroyan cheerleaders, you know, who were in the audience. But no, there was no indication of a crime wave around the schools. Certainly not an indication of a crime wave in the Poganip, unless you consider sleeping or being in a park after dark or smoking or having an open container a crime wave. And some middle-class people who want to purify the town may have that opinion. But let's be honest about it, and Terrazas is not being honest about it. He's using different kinds of words to suggest deeper, more serious problems that we have to address that aren't there, as far as I can see, or haven't been documented, surely.
I'm not advocating for not doing anything. I just want to be clear about the expectations attached to what it is that we are doing. And so if folks are thinking this is solving the issue, it's not solving the issue. Is it setting a standard? Yes.
Yeah, you see, there she again. This is Cynthia Chase. She goes back to the accepting this mythology that they're somehow setting standards without getting particular as to the kinds of standards they're setting up and the kind of population it's impacting and the kind of mythological crimes it's supposedly dealing with.
So as long as we're clear about what we're trying to accomplish with this, that's what I'm really sort of speaking to. I don't know if there's any other comments, if we just want to go to public comment.
Have we talked about this issue yet?
Okay. Keith McHenry arrives on his walker.
So I am definitely think this is horrendous that this is even has a second reading, for let alone a first reading. And I don't know that, you know, you're probably ignoring the suffering of the people that have to face this kind of brutality. And it's outrageous, it's inhumane, it shouldn't happen. I really urge you to all vote against this. If you have any sense of humanity at all, there should be no one having this done to them.
Now, you might notice that you and I, who have been, maybe if you're a regular listener to this show, we're familiar with this issue because it's been pounded into our heads because I've been yammering about it constantly. Know what we're talking about. But based upon this, and this is the entire hearing you just heard on Proposition 14, it's not over yet, but that's the public, this is, until now we have the public, you know, there's been no description of what this issue actually is, except I'm describing it to you. But did you hear any council members describing it? No. Did you hear a staff member describing it? No, and of course, the speakers, Keith McHenry being the first, also are making the same mistake. They are not educating the broader public what is actually happening. And I probably made the same mistake myself when I gave my longer tirade. I had a longer speech prepared, and I kind of went off
into the blue because it's, well, because it's easy to do when you're up there.
We heard at the last city council meeting one little story that was hearsay over and over and over again about how somebody was yelled at, attacked in a park by a homeless person. The people living outside are harassed and attacked by the policies of this city government every single day. And so I really urge you to show some like charity, some humanity, some compassion, and to vote down against this really outrageously inhumane law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith.
David mentioned Silva. I'm a 100% service-related disabled veteran, and I know what it is to be homeless. I know what it is to be a migrant. I know what it is to have repressive laws used ridiculously on innocent people. What is this ordinance addressing? What is this ordinance going to fix? All this ordinance is going to do is make it easier to sweep homeless people. That's all. That's the only interpretation that it has. We want to protect children. Why aren't we already? Are the police too busy doing things that aren't supposed to be done? Don't we have laws against a person putting a syringe in a child's school bathroom in their school? Don't we have laws against that already? If we don't, we're in trouble. No, this goes way too far. And to use children as the excuse, you use...
And, of course, that's really been the key point against this law and other anti-homeless laws. That real crimes already have laws that can be used to prosecute them, to arrest people, to remove people. And so instead, if your real objective is to remove people who look homeless or who make other people nervous because they're afraid they might do something, then you can't use existing law. You have to create a new law which says, oh, you can't be within 14 feet of a building. Oh, you can't be in a park after dark. Oh, you can't be within 300 feet of a school. Actually, you can be within 300 feet of a school, even under this ordinance, provided you aren't committing any other infraction, which, you know, is, I suppose, a mercy. But it does, however, mean that people in these huge park areas, and that's mostly homeless people at night, I would say, who are there, are going to be severely impacted. But the laws, in order to deal with real crimes, currently exist. You don't need new laws unless you're trying to make a broader sweep, to set up a broader net. And that's what they're trying to do, in my view.
Children against use for zoning against marijuana, zoning against homeless, zoning. These security enhancement zones are Stalinistic. This is how Stalin came into power. This kind of thinking that, well, you know, yes, the Constitution really doesn't matter, because, you know, we're doing the best for the people. These kind of rationalizations are the kind of thing that created Stalinism. It's the kind of thing we really have to avoid if we're going to save our Constitution at the local level. And that's where the Constitution is always threatened, at the local level. Please, security enhancement zones? Just the words themselves should give you pause. Yeah, okay, sure, it's for school children. A lot of things should be done for school children, and I think school children should be protected. If they are not being protected, I want to know why. I don't want to have a new law blaming homeless and sweeping homeless. Shame that this ever came. David Tarasas, I really respect you as thinking outside the box, but this is a bridge too far. This is too clever by a half. You know, it's too clever by a half that gave us Stalinism.
Thank you, David. Are there any other members of the public who want to speak on this? Yes. So Robert requested additional time, contacted me in advance about this.
So members of the community and city council, folks left in the chamber, standards. What kind of standards are we talking about? Unfortunately, we're really talking about fascistic standards, a phony whack-a-mole deal in which you have a situation. Let's look at this law a little more carefully, the proposed expansion of the stay-away zone law. It exponentially expands the time that a cop or a ranger can unilaterally order a person to leave an area and not return. This vastly expanded area includes all the Poganip, all of Arena Gulch and all of Moores Creek, how much of that area is within 500 feet of a school? Infinitesimal amount. It's clear...
300 feet, actually, but who's counting?
The function of this law extends far beyond dealing with security for children. I tried to look at some of the stats around what are the real crimes in these areas, what has Parks and Rec been doing with the existing stay-away law. Parks and Rec sites for 2016 and 2017 did not give me the addresses, and so we don't know how many of these people are being targeted or just impacted because they are poor or homeless. There's hardly a time to do a review of what I did get, though I want to thank the city staff for trying hard to provide that. But we still don't have the material. How much is it going to cost the city to do this? How much Parks and Rec time is taken for what specific criminal offenses? What the records do show is a massive use of the stay-away order. No indication of how long the stay-away periods are for, nor how many have been cited with possible year-in-jail crime punishment for violating the stay-aways. Nor is there any record of the fabled resources, which Councilmember Crone brought up, are missing, in spite of the hope that in the future the county and the city will work on these issues. What's existing now is the question. There's also no indication of any crimes within the specific locations of these zones. That is to say, to clarify, how many were issued within 300 feet of a school in these danger zones that you set up? This avoids the bother of proving someone guilty of a crime, the stay-away order business, because you don't have to go to court to prove it. You just give them a ticket, and then they have to go away. And if you have to give them two tickets, then they have to go away for a week. And that could be sleeping one night after another, or being in a park after dark twice. And where else do people go?
Actually, it's 3 weeks under this new law, and that's what this expansion is all about. It triples the time of the current stay-away law.
Who are homeless. Police Chief Andy Mills claimed that the current law and triple time law is being considered today, that this will avoid the criminalization of the homeless, is ridiculous, since each stay-away comes after an officer tickets for an underlying infraction offense, which creates the criminal record that he supposedly says is not being created. The wording of the statute is flawed and insufficient. There's no provision in the law that says the stay-away will end if there's no conviction of a crime. Very simple omission that's missing. The word may is a key problem with this law. The police officer doesn't have to issue a stay-away order. She or he can do it if she or he decides she wants to issue a stay-away order. There's no standard in the law for issuing the stay-away order except if you give them an infraction. You can if you feel like it, give them a stay-away order. This is inappropriate discretion and an inappropriate burden to put on police officers. It's also, I believe, unconstitutional. An individual getting four different citations, say, for sleeping after 11, being in a park after dark, sitting down within 14 feet of a building on the sidewalk downtown, or smoking in the back area of a park far away from the public, would face a three-month stay-away and a misdemeanor charge of $1,000 and 6 months in jail or a year in jail, depending on what the actual misdemeanor crime is. This is a town with no emergency shelter. No emergency shelter. There are waiting lists, but there is no emergency shelter tonight. And there's 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people outside. Essentially non-existent resources for the overwhelming majority. And what kinds of crimes are we getting for this? Well, supposedly Vice Mayor Terrazas' Public Safety Committee was supposed to review this matter when it was originally passed in 2013 and then expanded in 2015, 6 months later. I'm not aware that any such review was ever done by the Public Safety Committee. Maybe it was. I'd like to hear more about that if that's true. The online minutes for this are not available. And unfortunately, that committee was not audioed or videoed because Vice Mayor Terrazas has repeatedly refused to ask that be done. Thank you. This is the bad law. Send it back for further public hearings. Assess honestly the actual resources. Review the real impact on the poor population.
Thank you,
Thank
Everett.
You.
Wow. Say what you will. Is this on? About Robert Norse, but he really can get in there and slice and dice like a ninja.
And that is Brent Adams speaking.
I really applaud him for that. Very few people go into the granularity of things year after year, so I just want to acknowledge Robert for that. I have not gone deep into the granularity, but I know very close what happens to people with stay-away orders. I see them every day. People, and this is I know these are two different topics, the 24-hour stay-away order and this sort of school situation, but it'll play out the same way. It's an extreme hardship on the people who get these citations. The effect on them, of course, we don't have a storage program. Everyone has the belongings. Thanks for your preliminary comments on that. We have things moving forward. But the effect on people is, I don't think the city, and we all understand why the city as a corporation, as a community, would want to, on the surface, do something like this. Because it feels good. It sounds logical. But the effect on the individual is profoundly difficult. And I encourage you not to vote for this. And let's go double down on the root causes, not the fact that we have people doing drugs with mental health issues, but actually let's go deeper than that. The fact that people are profoundly desperate, the behaviors that we are seeing can be mitigated with some dignifying elements, like giving people a safe place to store their belongings, show dignity and respect to individuals with the way that we create legislation. I think, and I totally understand where this is coming from, but I second Robert's suggestion that we go spend a little more time on this. Again, I'll reiterate, people need safe place to keep belongings. They need easy access to showers and laundry. They need real, authentic caseworkers and access to mental health and addiction services. We're not offering that as a community, and something like this is just a weird, misfitting Band-Aid. Thanks.
Any other speakers on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll return to the Council for Deliberation and Action. Vice Mayor Traza.
Yeah, and I'll bring this back. During the last meeting, we talked about in 6 months kind of revisiting this and getting some information from staff. One of the things we did not talk about, though, is, and I appreciate...
And talk is the word, because as I mentioned in my speech, as far as I know, he didn't bring it back, and he didn't contest what I had to say. He didn't say, oh, yes, we did, Robert, we brought it back. But I believe if he had brought it back, he would have said so, but could be wrong.
Created Mr. Norse's comment is that what kind of public services are available? And, I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a written list of those types of programs that are available from the county that we could look at so we can have a reference so that we at least have that publicly available so people do know what is out there and how to maybe connect them to it.
And again, this is attempting to twist what I've said. I'm saying there are no resources out there. Not we need a list to show that there are no resources, phone numbers that give you answering machines or access to waiting lists where you have to wait months and months if you're accepted at all. You got to show you got a check and a pathway to housing and so forth. Terrazas knows this. If he doesn't know this, he shouldn't even be up there talking about it. He should be disqualifying himself from this discussion. But he is now using the fig leaf, sort of the carrot approach, the fluffy puffy approach, which is, oh, you know, a great idea. Let's get a resource list together, and then people will know what they can do so they can be, once they're told they can't sleep in the entire Poganip area at all, then they can go find some resources somewhere, preferably 5 miles off the coast.
But I'd like to take this, I'd like to move the second reading of this ordinance, and I'll ask the council to consider this.
Second.
There's a motion by Trust, a second by Neroyan.
Michelle Neroyan seconded it.
Councilmember Brown?
I have a couple of comments. I just want to make a comment before I say that I won't be voting for on the second reading. I wasn't here for the first reading. I apologize for that. I want to underscore some of the points that Mayor Chase made at the beginning of this agenda item in recognizing what this does not do, and I want to expand on that just a little bit, or actually a lot, probably. I too see this as... and while well-intentioned attempt to that is the results going to be expanding our move along policies. I think that we I think it may be the only thing that I disagree with Mr. Adams' comment on. There is nothing to like about this, for me at least, because what I see are people who are the most marginalized, who have nowhere to go. In fact, exacerbated by the fact that we have not moved more quickly on storage lockers, for example, I am told by, and it's anecdotal evidence, I haven't done my own survey, but I can tell you now, if you just walk outside, you'll talk to plenty of people who say that their mobility is limited, not just by physical constraints, their being unhoused, the act of being unhoused, which is not a crime, the last I checked. I'll keep saying it. But that their mobility is limited by they can't leave their stuff, and they have nowhere to put it. And so I think all of these are things that need to be addressed. You know, I want to see, some of these services that we as a city have said we're going to work on move forward.
And I apologize for the distortion, but that unfortunately is a part of the city council recording.
Before we talk about more ways to criminalize the act of being homeless, and I think that when we talk about this was this kind of a simple change, and you know, a 72-hour stay away only being for the purposes of safety for children and park goers, I don't think that's really the way it's going to play out. And until I have some confidence in that, I can't support an ordinance change. Like, I can't support this. So I'll just leave it there for now. There's plenty more to say, and we'll carry on the conversation.
Any other comments, or Councilmember Crone?
I feel like
Christian Bercrone,
the homeless coordinating committee's recommendations a while ago now. Was it February, March? Anyone remember?
May.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
It feels long.
I feel like, on this agenda, and no disrespect to anyone, but we have the bail schedule, which I think is another thing that kind of targets homeless people, and now we have the school enhancement, but we don't have anything about the storage facilities. We don't have anything about the showers. We don't have anything about the bathrooms. We don't have anything about the plugs. These are all stuff that is in the recommendations, but we haven't got there yet. We have the 2x2 committee, which I fully support, has not met yet, and we keep coming back with stuff that is again penalizing and greatly affecting people who are the most vulnerable in our community. If you look at the details here, if you think about three strikes, I don't think there's anybody up here who would support three strikes, but yet this kind of ordinance is like Xing people out. They can combine all this time, and they can have to stay away from these places for long periods of time. It's not just a certain period of time.
It actually is a certain period of time, but it's escalating periods of time. First time 3 days, second time 3 weeks, third time 3 months. And again, it's not if you are engaged in a particular piece of abusive behavior. It's if you violate any infraction in the city code in park-run territory that is within either 300 feet of a school zone or anywhere in the parks that have a tiny piece of which is within 300 feet of a school zone. So in the sense, it is like three, it actually lacks the protections of the three strikes law, because you have to be convicted for the third, offense. You don't even have to go to court for this. The cop decides to do it with no benefit of any kind of court process or even a standard that he has to use or that she has to use.
It makes no sense to me, and that we just keep going in this direction. In politics, it seems to me you need stuff to hang your hat on. You know, if we do stuff like this, we need to move in a direction that shows people, like we just said, I don't know all the services. I mean, do we even have a tenant's rights? Where do tenants go? Most tenants that I know of don't know where to go. People call the city, they send them to the county. I mean, I don't know the list of services you're talking about. I would love to, but I talk to people in the street and what they do, and people who are homeless, people who are occupying parks.
And, of course, this, again, is Crone going in the wrong direction, because they actually, the city did put out a list of services, or someone did in the city or county, and then it was researched rather extensively by Jennifer, a local activist 3 months ago, who found that these services led almost nowhere, that to phone numbers that led to answering machines, to requirements to engage in appointment times that wouldn't give you any immediate services, or wouldn't, you know, that were difficult to access or not available, and no shelter services at all. The Homeless Lack of Services Center hasn't provided out of Coral Street any services for shelter in terms of emergency shelter since the summer of 2015, when they decided to ramp things up in favor of folks who have a pathway to housing. Discussion of this resource list is nonsense. Now, there is a resource list for food that was put out. Charity, an activist who you can find online, and the major food providers are St. Francis Soup Kitchen and Food Not Bombs. There are a few others, too, a few other free food services. You're not going to get fat on these food services, I can tell you, but there are a few, and there's still hunger problems.
They have nowhere else to go, and I've dealt with it for many years. I live in Lower Ocean. I live right on the Jesse Street Marsh. People are there constantly, year-round, except when there's water in the marsh. And it's a living room. It's a place for people to be when there's no other place for them to be, and we're making less and less places for people to be. There is something here on the what's in the packet that I received anyway says that I voted in favor of it. I did not vote in favor of it before, and I'm not going to support this motion today.
Unless there's other comments? Oh, Councilmember Ryan.
Yeah. I don't see this as something being based on someone's housing status. I see it as behavior. Because the park near my house that I go to quite often actually has quite a bit of homeless people that hang out in it every day. A lot of them are the same people. And, you know, I walk through and I have no problems with
it. Of course, the park near her house isn't really the issue. It is the large parks that are not near her house that people have to use under in areas and ways that have been made illegal but that are necessary for survival purposes. And her refusal to acknowledge this, much less to articulate it, shows either, again, a fundamental kind of hypocrisy or a blindness or an indifference to the issue, a kind of class unconsciousness that she has, or class consciousness, as activist Peter Marin in Santa Barbara might put it.
The folks that are there, they're not. In fact, we usually exchange pleasantries a lot of times as I'm walking through the park. So I think this really is about behavior, and I think having an expectation that people can go to the park, I'm not expecting that it's going to be a perfect experience every time, that, you know, nobody will ever have a negative experience in a park, but I think it's absolutely reasonable to have an expectation that most of the time when you go to the park, there isn't someone there who's screaming at you or someone who...
And the question is, how many citations in the last 4 years, or stay-away orders, since that's what this is about, the expansion of the stay-away order time, have been about screaming people in the parks? And she will find, if she did the research that we did, or even read our account of it, or heard us talk about it at City Council, and even thought that it might have some truth, minuscule. The main target of this is camping, sleeping, smoking, and being in a park after dark and open container. None of which has any relation to even making ordinary people feel uncomfortable, particularly when it's done far away from a public view, in the Poganip at night, let's say. So, as my colleague Steve Plaich might say with Rochelle Narayan, though it's been true for years, I'm done with her nonsense. And it's not just that she proposes laws that make it illegal for people to use RVs to sleep in Santa Cruz, or to be in, to live in if they have to, She tried to. She failed because the Coastal Commission stepped in. So far, she has failed. But there's this general clueless attitude she has. It's really hard to believe that she's been around not just as a city council member, but as a member of the it's the Public Works of the Planning Commission for quite a while, which is where her RV ban came out of, and her ban on being parking around Arrett Circle, where the old church programs used to be on the west side.
Who's defecating in front of you, or someone who's taking, you know, drugs in front of you.
Now, if she were concerned about opening bathrooms, one might take seriously her blather about defecating. Otherwise, it's just a way of throwing shit at the homeless. That's what she's doing. In a really underhanded and misleading way, which denies her responsibility as someone who could insist that the damn bathrooms be open, not just during the city council meetings when the middle-class people can relieve themselves, but throughout the rest of the day. But she won't, and she doesn't, and she hasn't. And as for drugs, what is she talking about in terms of stats? Well, very few of those infractions are for drug offenses, as far as we could find. I don't even remember any, but I'm sure there were some. It was all for the homeless status crimes. And that really, since she has been told this and she should know this, that's the agenda she's supporting. Criminalization of those people outside with an aim to driving them out of town and pleasing those who want to see them gone.
I think those are all reasonable expectations to have for a majority of the time. And whether it's, you know, a group of people drinking and being obnoxious in a park, or whether they're housed or unhoused, I don't think really matters. I think it's, do we have public spaces that for the most part are places for people to circulate and feel safe?
This would be true if she actually looked at the stats and found that the same number of people who were unhoused as were impacted as were housed. And if the standards really had to do with actual crimes. But they don't. And therefore what she's saying is false.
A reasonable way, and feel like areas they want to go. And that's what the city needs to do. We need to figure out a way for all people to circulate in our public spaces and feel relatively safe without threat. Now, of course, I believe that we need to address the root causes of some of our social issues. I spent 6 months with two other council members coming up with 20 recommendations that unfortunately can't get implemented as quickly as I would like to see implemented. But you don't ignore upholding public standards, waiting for these other things to go into place.
Again, the public standards she talks about upholding by expanding with these 300-foot zones and triple time zones, it's not been shown that there are problems of the kind she mentions in any numbers in those zones. And therefore, what she's saying is it's in order to deal with the possibility of that and the response to some anecdotal accounts, which may well be true, that she's heard of people acting badly in the parks and frightening children, frightening adults. Because of those few, she doesn't mind creating a huge raft of laws with no protection for the overwhelming majority of homeless people who, it has been shown through police and Parks and Rec Ranger over the last 4 years, are the major target, or should we say, these are the people that the laws impact, mainly, and not for the kinds of crimes she's talking about. Her responsibility as a council member is to know this, to educate herself, to pay some attention to this. After all, she's supposed to have spent 6 months studying this kind of stuff. But, of course, she doesn't seem to have picked up on that.
And just sitting here, I feel a little bit inspired. Yeah, we need a public services brochure. We need something that we can hand out to people. And I'd be willing to carry 100 with me at all times and give them out to anybody who wants them. So out of this discussion, I think that's a great idea and something I probably will pursue later. But I'm going to go ahead and support this because I think it's...
So it's an attempt to wrest a smile from the death's face skeletonic grimace of this ordinance and its impact on people. We'll give out a brochure. It reminds me of past such incidents with a similar city council, which was much more progressive in its claims than she. Back in 1988, the Wormhout Council took the resolution of its own committees and task forces that suggested not immediately giving a ticket to a person living in their vehicle, but giving them a warning instead to move on. That was considered the radicalism of the day. She voted it down along with other liberals on the council, including Rotkin, Baird, Weed, and others, and instead suggested that a little card be given out which said that reminded people that there were two spaces at the River Street shelter that people could go seek shelter at. That's two beds. Hard to believe that things haven't changed in, what is it now? Is it 30 years or 40 years? My math is tired. 30 years, I guess.
Really focuses on behavior and allows us to create standards that need to be established so more people, the majority of people, can enjoy the parks.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments, but I also appreciate Councilmember
David
Brown
Chirazes.
And Councilmember Crone's comments about this because, I mean, in my opinion, these two passed, they should be happening concurrently. And I feel like we, as a council, unanimously passed some actions. And I think there's this kind of basically push and pull on this council in terms of this balance between, you know, county programs dealing with health and human services, mental health, some of the substance abuse issues, and what the city's role in dealing with that. And I think that is something that we need to really kind of reconcile. I know from something that Councilmember Crone has recently written, you know, he's feeling that the city should step in and start prioritizing that because there hasn't been enough action at the county. Now, I feel that there's certain roles of government, responsibilities of government, that as a city we have these certain responsibilities, and one of those is to maintain, you know, the public safety and health of our residents. And
again, the threat on the public safety and health. What is it? They didn't show it, and yet he announces it and trumpets it, or just sort of speaks of it as if it's a foregone conclusion and at the core of this ordinance, even though it really has nothing to do with what the ordinance does.
We have certain ability to pass rules that deal with that. We don't manage the health and human services aspect, and we have taken action, and we have contributed significant amounts of money to help kind of prioritize those issues. And I think that these are kind of issues that we need to work on independently, but we don't just disregard the fact that we need to do something because we're in a crisis situation. I mean, you just need to walk downtown or go to some of our parks, and you see it. And
but what is he talking about? Why doesn't he come out and say it? I can't stand seeing all these homeless people.
Some will argue, and I've heard people say it, that it's like a new normal, and I do feel like it's not. Because there are things that we can do, and you look at other communities, and you see what they're doing. We've made a part of our council two-year work plan, certain priorities. Those are things that we are acting on. And so I just don't feel, as a resident, as a parent, and as a person here, I can disregard that and say that we can't do anything. Because
what does he want to do, and what is the real problem he's talking about? Is he saying you walk downtown, you see people fighting with each other, shooting up drugs, doing all kinds of truly abusive things in the parks? I don't. Maybe he's got sharper eyes than I do. But you do see people violating laws at different times because laws that he has supported that other councils have made and laws that he has created through his subcommittee. So maybe he's saying, you're just not being law obedient enough to all these ordinances we've made, and unless you do that, you're a criminal, and if you're a criminal, we don't want you in our parks. And gosh, that just seemed to coincide strangely with the homeless classification, doesn't it? What a coincidence. But the real point here is that he doesn't like what he sees. And notice he's not man enough, but I'd like to say he's not honest enough and courageous enough to say what he's saying, which is a fascist mentality. I don't want these poor people to be visible. Get them the fuck out of my parks. He doesn't want to say that.
We do need to do a lot more in terms of our health and human services as an entire community. But we do also need to represent our residents here and some of the issues they're facing. And so I support this, but I do want to make sure that these other issues that we're taking on a concurrent path, we continue to move forward on.
Well, I just wanted to add that we do have scheduled for the city council.
Says Martine Bernal, city manager.
We do have some action items related to the Homelessness Coordinating Committee recommendations. And so we do have a scheduled update for you on October 10th. And there is some work being done on some of the more immediate items, like the expanding the shower facilities, the storage facilities, the charging stations. And so those, I think, will be in place over the next few months.
Now, this is interesting. I mean, that might be a positive thing, however limited, these things, storage facilities, showers, and so forth. But Bernal is talking about an update, and he's also saying working on. Again, it's not clear, and I've heard no resolutions passed by City Council to implement these things. So it seems unlikely that anything is going to be happening in the next month or two around this without actual direction from the City Council. But Bernal has been a key figure, that's Martine Bernal, the city manager, in imposing his own administrative crackdown on homeless people around City Hall and the library. And he may be... Well, I'm wondering if he's playing for a little a liberal constituency here by saying, oh no, we have these other things planned along with this wretched ordinance that I've... he didn't create the ordinance. I don't want to be unfair to Martine Bernal. But he has persistently been either cracking down on homeless people at City Hall and protesters there, or he was responsible for the posting of signs that essentially created the so-called city campus, which suddenly encompassed the library area and removed all kinds of public spaces for homeless people to collapse into when they were exhausted, tired, trying to sleep, trying to get some community and safety at night.
But we'll give you an update on that here next month.
There's actually been work done on each of the items.
That's correct.
And we'll have a report. And some of them, like you said, the most immediate ones will be, you know, they're the easier ones to accomplish quickly. We know that we have some pretty hefty lists on there as well.
So again, Chase is saying there's nothing being done, but we will be reporting on it. And then we'll, you know, get into doing it, we hope, assuming she can get the vote.
Looks like no other comments, so we are ready to move to a vote. All those in favor, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so that's four. And those opposed? No. So that is, it passes with Matthews and Watkins, Trozis and Narayan supporting, and myself, Brown and Crone opposing.
Should take flight. There's another danger born and
loves the beast will learn to bite. How can you fight if you can't recognize a warning? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Whenever take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. Today you may earn a living wage, tomorrow you may be on the dole. Though there's millions going hungry, you needn't disengage, for it's them, not you, that's fallen in the hole. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know.
Today the soldiers took away one,
tomorrow they may take away two. Sure it was taken last year, but surely they will never take you. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. It's alright for you if you run with the pack, it's alright if you agree with all they do. If fascism is slowly climbing back, it's not here yet, so what's it got to do with you? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. Weeds are all around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night. If you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing, you may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, but never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.
And that was Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall from the song, probably, gosh, it was published on YouTube on September 3rd, 2016, but I think I heard it first in the 70s. It's slightly changed. I'd say 80s or 90s. Good song. And we're going to end this session of Bathrop Spears Broadsides with an interview with Police Chief Andy Mills, who I ran into outside the city council right after the vote on the stay-away law, or the stay-away ordinance time expansion. And I may not be able to play all of it because I'm going to be tempted to interrupt with commentary, but I'll try to restrain myself so you can hear what he has to say, and also me, because I am in a debate, in essence, with him. He's the new chief of police, and keep your eyes open.
Andy Mills.
And Andy, you're a newcomer from Eureka.
I am.
And you are now the police chief. You have five stripes on your shoulder there.
Well, four stars on my collar and too many stripes on my sleeve from 5 years each, so I'm an old man is the bottom line.
I couldn't even count them all.
Exactly. So do you have a calculator?
What brought you to city council today?
Well, I was here for a lot of different issues. Part of my job is to support council and give information if asked.
What was the most difficult question you were asked today, or were there any difficult questions?
Well, I wasn't asked any questions today.
So I
sat in the back and wrote memos all day.
I see. How exciting, yes. So
that is exciting, isn't it?
Well, no, not really. I wouldn't think. Well, I guess it depends.
No, they weren't exciting, I can tell you that.
So what made you decide to apply for a job here? Better wages, the possibility of, you know, toking up in beautiful Santa Cruz, surfing?
All the above.
Another opportunity to drive the homeless away. What's this?
Well, isn't that a kind of a leading
question
you're making?
Well, I was referring to your memo to the city manager that has been broadly posted. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
Which memo?
Well, in which you advise, I think you helped participate in getting rid of an encampment up there.
You talk about the encampment in Eureka?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. What would you like to know about it?
Well, tell me about how that happened, how that went down, where people went, and so forth.
Well, if you're asking about the Palco Marsh, where about 300 people were living and dumping somewhere in the neighborhood of almost 200,000 tons of human waste into the bay, that was a significant problem.
And you naturally proposed that porta potties be sent in immediately.
We did. We put in porta potties three different times into the marsh.
How many porta potties were put in?
We put in three in one location and three in another location, and they were burned down both times.
Now, after what period of time?
A couple of them were burned down immediately.
But some remained.
And some remained.
And how many would you say, if you remember up in Eureka, if there being a public event for 300 people, would be required by city law or you would advise would be appropriate? In other words, how many porta-potties for just a one-time public event that you thought would garner 300 people would you think would be necessary?
I'm not really sure. That's a good question.
I don't either. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, you know, I'm glad to hear you put in porta-potties for the
people that could use them, yeah.
And the marsh, again, the name of the marsh is
Palco Marsh.
And we're talking about the most recent dispersal of the camp, right, which was in May, is that correct?
May of 2015, yeah.
And I'm thinking, though, of a memo that I saw that you supposedly wrote in this year, in May of this year. Did you, am I just simply misreading it?
I think what you're referring to is an article that came out that published the memos this year.
Oh, so in other words, okay, because it sounded like it was a pretty harsh, get them out of there sort of approach without any real alternatives for the folks.
Well, that wasn't my memo, because I was actually against pushing people out of the marsh because I was concerned about displacement issues. So what you're probably referring to is a going back and forth between the park and rec director and the city attorney and myself. They wanted them all pushed out with no place to go. I fought for a location that people could go and camp.
Were you successful?
We were. I was successful. We were able to allow them to camp at different locations throughout the city, which were not managed, and that turned into Betty's Blue Angel Village, where we were able to cycle almost 250 people through them in 1 year for 90 days at a time to allow them to become healthier because they could sleep and get consistent food and get rest so that they could ultimately wind up getting housed. And again, we cycled almost 250 people through that.
So, Lee, do you have any thoughts or questions?
Yeah, and it's interesting that the encampment came up. When you look at the police reports for the day, you're going to find a report about someone that got mugged down at Neary's Lagoon. I was down there feeding the ducks today, and some guy came and literally tried to strong arm my backpack. I ended up chasing him down and having to tackle him. And I want to know when we're going to get some sort of a safe campground, safe patrolled campground, where we can sleep without worries about it. It's so easy when you're sleeping. Sneak thieves. This was totally audacious. In my 40 years here, I've never experienced someone trying to strong-arm me like that.
What's your first name?
Lee.
Lee?
Yeah.
Well, Lee, thank you for asking that question. So I'm pushing for two things here. One is a place that people can sit during the daytime. A second thing is I'm pushing for is that we need a place for people to store their property that's safe so that it doesn't get stolen from them. When you only have meager pieces of property, the last thing you want is that stuff stolen. And then the third thing I'm pushing for is a place to lawfully sleep that can be managed and it can be safe and it can be somewhere that people can sleep for extended periods of time so they can actually get healthier so that then they can try to find jobs and get their ID and all that kind of thing.
That sounds good. Do you have any support at all from anybody in the city for actually doing?
No, I do. I think I'm making headway. I talked to the city manager about it. We are having, you know, conversations about trying to find out a way to do that.
Because part of what I'm seeing here, and I've lived here for 40 years.
Right.
They always said if they didn't make the services, people wouldn't come. The problem is the weather here is so mild compared to like being homeless in Chicago or
right.
Not dangerous like being right. In a big city. That I remember the first meeting they had right over there at the Civic downtown meeting about what to do, and there were only maybe 100, 200 homeless people, and everybody was screaming, "We just want them to go away." And Judge Kelsey, who's long retired, actually stood up and said, "But they're not going to go away, people. What are you going to do?" And the answer was disenfranchise and drive.
Yeah, you know, you bring up some good points, and I think one of the issues is many people think that if you offer services, people will come. I've never seen a piece of research that would show me that that is the case. Now, I think there are things you can do to harden those resources to make sure that they're going to people who are in the most need. I think that you can maybe tighten it down. Like, for instance, I know that if you go someplace for 15 days and you claim that you've been there for 15 days, then you automatically get aid. I think there might be a better way to do that, but here's my biggest issue with this. Most of the problems that we see are not the responsibility of local government, the city. This is the responsibility of the state and the federal government, and that's where these solutions have to come from.
But the ordinances are here at the city, and you were supporting a stay-away ordinance today. An expansion of the stay away ordinance. You understand that's going to severely impact homeless folks.
There's also a larger overweening issue here, is you have a lot of people that actually come here willing to work and become constructive members of the community. I was able to do that in 1976. I was hitchhiking around the United States. They've totally eliminated job resources and housing resources, and I'm waiting for the local kids to rise up and take the city council hostage. They're like in their 30s and they're still living with mommy and daddy, and a lot of the time it's absolutely
guys our age can't do that, can we?
But let me get back to the issue that I came here for city council today, and I spoke on. You probably heard me speak. In fact, I mentioned you personally by name. How can you possibly support a law that makes it that bans people from areas for a simple infraction and gives that discretion to any officer who wants to do it without even any court process?
Well, I think that this is a solution that allows us to tell people they can't come back to the park. It gives the residents around that park immediate relief. They can go to a different park. There's nothing that says they can't go to a different park and sleep. And then,
if it's their first infraction, if it's a second infraction, then that park can also be banned.
Well, at that park, correct. But at some point, I think you would even agree with this, people have to correct their behavior.
Well, if you're sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, it's a crime. Well, if you're in a park after dark, it's a crime. And when you look at the citations, I know you don't support that. I would hope you don't support that.
I don't support that. In fact, just so you know, I've just written policy for our department that I'm vetting through other people first, but so that we are not going to be doing enforcement during the hours of darkness on people sleeping.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. When will that begin?
As soon as I can get it vetted by everybody.
And what's your estimate of the time frame on that?
Within a month.
And the other issue, of course, is where people sleep. People go into the Greenbelt areas. You just saw them, with your support, expanding. If you're in the Poganip at all, after dark, it's a crime. What this will do, if we also have this proposal that you have, which is to let people sleep after dark, or at least not get tickets, it'll drive them into the downtown and residential and industrial areas because they can't go into the green belts anymore because of your recommendation and the city council's vote. Okay. Don't you feel a little bad about that?
No.
You think it's okay to ban the entire Poganip at night from where many homeless people currently sleep? Do you have any other places to offer them to go?
Okay, like I just told you, we are not going to do enforcement at night. Allow people to sleep. That includes the parks.
But the rangers, can you speak for them?
The rangers.
No. But you're supporting something that gives the rangers that power.
Yeah. Yes, I am. Because somehow you have to account for the residents around those parks. And when somebody is screaming...
There are no residents around the Poganip Park.
Okay, well, the Poganip Park is a little bit different. But the parks, is there a school around that park where they can't camp within it?
There is a tiny bit of the Poganip that is within 300 feet of a small private school. And that's the basis that you may have heard me say today for banning the entire Poganip. And making it a situation where if you get a second or third offense, you could be banned for a month. An offense is a sleeping ban offense for rangers or a camping offense. It is a smoking offense if you're smoking. And where are homeless people going to smoke? 75% addiction for homeless folks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm saying is that...
Look, Robert, what you're getting to, is this tough? Yeah, it's tough.
No, I'm getting to, you seem to be contradicting your own policies if, in fact, you are sincerely intending, and I tend to believe you.
So, okay, so what you're asking then is, you know, don't contact them, leave them alone, whatever they do is fine, there's all these excuses.
No, real crimes.
What we need is to have compassion, but yet accountability. So there has to be a balance here, and that's why I'm going way out of my way to take this risk to try to work with the homeless community, let them self-regulate if they're willing to do that, and not create the problems. And I think that people like you can add to that and help in terms of helping control.
Some of these problems are created by bigotry and prejudice on the part of people who are concerned about the mere visible appearance of homeless people. They don't want to see them around here. And they will call your force and the parks and rangers to get rid of them. And now they can do so with impunity in the Poganip. If they see someone there at night, they can call in, you know, not your forces, because you're saying you will not do that,
well,
but the rangers.
If there's a complaint, we'll do enforcement if there's a complaint. But and listen, you brought up a question. Is part of it biased and economic strata? Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there is some of that, that somebody doesn't want to see a person who's poor. The poor we have always had with us. The poor we will always have with us. And so I think part of the ethos of people like me and you is to love and appreciate the poor, but that does not give license or excuse for those who are poor or wealthy to behave in a way that harms the rest of society.
How do you get a standard that will stop the wealthy from criminalizing the poor when you are a part of the process and we're today of doing that?
Well, Robert, listen, you know, you and I are probably going to see differently on politics, and we'll have to have a cup of coffee and break bread over that to have these at a deeper level. But I can tell you this. Again, behavior has to stop that is destructive to our community.
Rich behavior? See, that's the, what about...
I mentioned that. I mentioned that 2 seconds ago.
You know, the behavior of phony complaints against poor people enabled by this kind of ordinance that passed today.
Of all the radio calls we have concerning the homeless in the parks... Do you know how many wound up with stay-away orders?
From the police or from the rangers?
From the both.
Well, I can tell you from the rangers because I counted them. Every single complaint from 2014 and 2015 received a stay-away order with very few exceptions.
How many were there?
A couple hundred.
Okay.
Not complaints. I'm sorry. Citations.
Citations.
Yeah.
So I can tell you this. Of all the radio calls we had, 3,500 or so so far, 3,770-something this year, less than about 100 wound up in stay-away orders. So that's a pretty small percentage.
How many ended up in infractions?
I think 200 and some. I have the numbers. I was penciling them out while we were sitting in there.
You also remember my question, and it's a question you're going to have to, you know, deal with your officers, which is, what's the standard that you are going to suggest to your officers they use and whether to issue a stay-away order? Because and apparently there's no standard in the ordinance for it other than issuing an infraction.
Yeah. Well, obviously you disagree with the ordinance, and that's your prerogative. You're a citizen.
What will your standard be to do that?
My standard is if they're creating a problem in terms of there's a complaint from a citizen that appears valid to you, then you take action. It's up to the officer's discretion, and so that's what we're going to go on.
So even a person who's sleeping at night and you're trying to have proactive enforcement, yeah. But you're going to say, you're going to go to that person, you will merit such complaints, you'll give stay-away orders. If any member of the public complains about that and simply says they're doing something illegal, it doesn't matter whether it's hurting anyone else. It's just they have identified that. And we have vigilante neighborhood groups that work with the police to do this, as you may know.
With the police?
Well, let's put it this way. They refer people to the police.
Right.
Police hold meetings in the police community room, which Take Back Santa Cruz attends, as does the downtown association, the downtown neighbors, the Santa Cruz neighbors. You know, groups of people that have legitimate interests, but also have class interests.
Yeah.
And that class interest means getting homeless people out of sight, regardless of the lawfulness.
Well, listen, you know, again, you and I may disagree on some of that stuff, but isn't that the purpose of a democracy?
The police force, and I don't. That's the difference. So you're armed. Well, you have your arm with you. You keep both arms with you, actually.
Yeah. Sun's out.
I like it. He's showing his muscles. But I got to watch my step here. So in other words, what I'm saying is, it seems to me that if you're serious about these compassionate policies, you also have to have a policy that deals with the issue of
class warfare
from the rich. How are you going to deal with that aspect of it, other than simply say, you know, repeat this mantra that Terraza says, oh, bad behavior standards.
That's my mantra. I don't know if it's his mantra. It's my mantra. It's
also his mantra.
Okay, well, that's fine. Dave can do whatever he wants. He's
copying you.
Well, he's not only just copying me, he's an elected politician. But I can tell
don't
you
don't use that kind of language with me.
I can tell you this. the reason I've implemented this policy is to give discretion to our officers so they don't feel like they have to go out there and take somebody to jail or to cut them a sight or do a stay order if they're camping. Now, if the person's creating problems, breaking bottles, leaving syringes, doing the things that really drive this community nuts, then we're going to take action.
Are you going to set up a set of explicit standards?
No.
Because, see, that way people will know. If you want people to obey rules, you got to set down what the rules are.
Agreed. I agree with that.
The only rules there is you can't be in the park at night. You can't sleep after 11. You can't smoke a cigarette, even if you're addicted to a cigarette and you have no place to go.
Yeah.
Those are not rules. Those are ways of catching people and driving them away at the discretion of an officer. Do you want that kind of police force?
Well, I think what you're saying is it has to be 100% your way or not at all. Well, that's kind of what you're saying.
Propose an alternative here.
Well, no, I don't see an alternative. What I hear you saying is it has to be this way. I am telling you, I'm giving my officers as much discretion as possible so that they can make a reasonable choice when they're dealing with people. And my instruction is, and this policy is, to be as compassionate as possible with the people who are less fortunate than we are.
And I hear you, and what am I going to say? That's a bad idea? No, it's obviously a good idea.
What you should say is that's a good step in the right direction. I don't know of any other police chiefs doing that. Andy, thank you.
I'll think about it. But what I want to say is you yourself would want to know that you're violating a law which you could be criminalized for before he gives you the ticket. So what I'm saying is, if you're giving your officers the discretion, you should also be saying, you should also be giving them a set of guidelines. Under these circumstances...
That's the purpose of the policy.
Yes, but the specific guidelines should then be given to the public. So members...
to everybody.
So, in other words, members of the public will know, if you do the following activities, you're likely to get a stay-away order and a ticket. But the problem is going to be, of course, that people who are critical of you on the right are going to say, wait a minute, they're violating the law. That's not, all these other things are. We didn't vote on those things. We don't care if they broke a bottle. We don't want them there. Get them out of there. I'm complaining. Your responsibility is to remove them. And that's going to be the problem.
Okay, Robert, I think I've demonstrated in the short time I've been here, I've got pretty broad shoulders. I can handle criticism from the right and the left. I mean, I don't know if you saw the letter I put out to the president last week.
No. Where can one find that?
You can find it online. I mean, it's on KVTU. It's on a variety of places, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera.
What should you browse for? What should you look for?
A letter to Trump. Here's what I did. I wrote a letter to Trump about DACA. And saying that this doesn't make any sense, and as a leader, part of our job is to protect the vulnerable. And I demonstrated, because I took a lot of heat over that from the far right, saying that
you want the immigrants to come in,
and blah 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 blah, you know the deal. So I think I've demonstrated that I really, at this age, kind of like you, don't really care what people think of me. I'm going to do what I believe is right.
When you write a letter to Jim Hart telling him to change his damn policy at the jail regarding immigrants, then I will say you have local credibility with me, because you'll be doing something where you actually are going to face some real flack from fellow law enforcement officials, and that might be hard to address.
Well, first of all, Jim Hart, I don't know if you're aware of this, publicly supported SB 54.
He did, but he also he refuses to accept the policies that San Francisco does in not notifying immigration officials at all.
I don't know about that, but Jim and I...
Look it up.
Yeah, Jim and I have had discussions about that, and I feel very strongly that it's not our responsibility to force immigration at all. Now, I'm going to investigate criminal activity, and criminal activity, serious criminal activity, not being here in an undocumented status, which is a
sleeping on
crime,
the sidewalk.
Or sleeping on a sidewalk. It's our job to investigate real criminal activity. And so that's what we're going to focus on. I got to run to a meeting.
First of all, I want to thank you for taking at least 10 minutes to talk. And you should be warned that you are the first police chief that has done this. Be advised and be cautious.
I love you, Robert.
Take care of yourself.
Right. Have a good day.
All right.
That was Chief Andy Mills last Tuesday, day before yesterday, answering questions for a longer period of time than, well, just to say any police chief, but any police officer has done, with few exceptions downtown when there were actual incidents occurring. Now, I would say that's the longest interview I had with a police official ever. Although, he has to be watched carefully in this regard, because he is... I don't know. Liberals can be very dangerous when they think they're being liberal, but they're not. And particularly liberals with guns, like police officers, and particularly the head of the police department. He seems like a very nice guy, obviously. He's more responsive to coming down off his pedestal and talking to ordinary people, even critics, than other police officers have been in the past, perhaps because he just got here. And he hasn't been pressed to do otherwise. Here I wrote to him yesterday. First, I advised him that it would be played on this station at this time. And I've added him to the Huff email list, which you can get on, too, if you want to be part of the Homeless United email list. Just give me a call at 423-4833, and I'll put you on the list. Leave me your email. I also noted that gave him a reference to the story I wrote about the stay-away ordinances on Santa Cruz Indie Media, which I encourage people to read if they want to revisit this ordinance and review it, although it's now law or will be in 29 or 28 days. And I invited him to respond on the air to my thoughts, which he might have not have felt had the time to do at the time. I told him I felt he didn't respond substantially to the issues I raised, how the criminalization is intensified, not ameliorated, by each stay-away issued, since each requires an infraction. I also wrote, if you are sincere and seek substance in your intention to direct officers to stop harassing the homeless after dark, for such crimes as sleeping and or being in a park after dark, you need to clarify what behaviors you actually regard as criminal and would actually trigger a citation for being in a park after dark, one of the largest categories of stay-away crimes for rangers, for instance. You also need to publicly urge the Parks and Rec enforcement gang to adopt a similar position, or else you're simply shifting the reality of repression to another now well-funded agency. Both for your officers and for the sake of those who have suffered hundreds of citations and stayaways in the last few years, mostly for survival behavior, you need to specify the so-called behavior standards so loudly touted at City Council. Which behaviors will be red flags so that not merely being in a park after dark, even after a complaint from some local anxious resident or business person, becomes the basis for driving a poor person who has no hope of emergency shelter in this town in the near future away. But then I fear your official position, in spite of your good intentions, makes a substantive and candid response difficult, if not impossible. It was surprising to see Mayor Chase side with the minority against the Terrazas bulldozer, so perhaps you may have an ally there if you choose to change your mind on the stay-away issue. Let me know if you have any questions, and so forth. Another Peggy Seeger song, and tune in again at 9:30 on Sunday morning, and you'll probably hear more of me, of the Mime Troupe, which I caught on audio.
In the morning we built the city.
In the afternoon walked through its streets.
Evening saw us leaving. We wandered through our days as if they would never end. All of us imagined we had endless time to spend. We hardly saw the crossroads and small attention gave to landmarks on the journey from the cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave.
Did you learn to dream in the morning?
Abandon dreams in the afternoon.
Wait without hope in the evening.
Did you stand there in the traces and let them feed your lies? Did you trail along behind them wearing blinkers on your eyes? Did you kiss the foot that kicked you? Did you thank them for their scorn? Did you ask for their forgiveness for the act of being born? Act of being born, act of being born. Did you alter the face of the city?
Make any change in the world you found?
Or did you observe all the warnings? Did you read the trespass notices? Did you keep off the grass? Did you shuffle off the pavement just to let your betters pass? Did you learn to keep your mouth shut? Were you seen and never heard? Did you learn to be obedient and jump to at a word? Jump to at a word? Jump to at a word?
Did you ever demand any answer?
The who and the what and the reason why?
Did you ever question the setup?
Did you stand aside and let them choose while you took second best? Did you let them skim the cream off and then give to you the rest? Did you settle for the shoddy and did you think it right to let them rob you right and left and never make a fight? Never make a fight. Never make a fight.
What did you learn in the morning?
How much did you know in the afternoon?
Were you content in the evening?
Did they teach you how to question when you were at the school? Did the factory help you grow? Were you the maker or the tool? Did the place where you were living enrich your life? And then did you reach some understanding of all your fellow men, all your fellow men, all your fellow men?
We would say, what are we talking about? This is discrimination. So I think we can say the same thing here.
Enter. To the next dimension.
Enter.
To the next dimension.
Enter.
To the next
dimension. If you have any comments or questions.
To the next dimension.
Enter.
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 Are you in the next dimension yet? Okay. This is Galactic Activation Radio. You, 101.1 Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org. You know, this is a community supported radio, bringing you shows you don't hear places. Galactic Activation Radio. I'm gonna play for you a bunch of music you've never heard before. It's very amazing. But first, I would like to read, I'm gonna attempt to read an article about the holographic nature of reality. Okay, prepare yourself. In 1982, a remarkable event took place at the University of Paris. A research team led by physicist Alan Aspect performed what may turn out to be one of the most important experiments of the 20th century. You did not hear about it on the evening news. In fact, unless you are in the habit of reading scientific journals, you have probably never even heard of Aspect's name, though there are some who believe his discovery may change the face of science. Aspect's experiment is related to the EPR experiment, a consciousness experiment which has been devised by Albert Einstein and is called colleagues Paul Stille and Rosen in order to disprove quantum mechanics on the basis of the Pauli exchange principle, exclusion principle, contradicting special relativity. Aspect and his team discovered that under certain circumstances, subatomic particles such as electrons are able to instantaneously communicate with each other regardless of the distance separating them. It doesn't matter whether they are 10 feet or 10 billion miles away. Somehow, each particle always seems to know what the other is doing. The problem with this feat is that it violates Einstein's long-held tenet that no communication can travel faster than the speed of light, since traveling faster than the speed of light is tantamount to breaking the time barrier. This daunting proposal prospect has caused some physicists to try to come up with elaborate ways to explain away Aspect's findings, but it has inspired others to offer even more radical explanations. University of London physicist David Bohm, for example, believes Aspect's findings imply that object reality does not exist, that despite its apparent solidity, the universe is at heart a phantasm, a gigantic and splendid detailed hologram. To understand why Bohm makes this startling assertion, one must first understand a little about holograms. A hologram is a three-dimensional photograph made with the aid of a laser. To make a hologram, the object to be photographed in first bathed in light of a laser beam. Then a second laser beam is bounced off the reflected light of the first, and then resulting interference pattern, the area where the two laser beams co-mingle, is captured on film. When the first film is developed, it looks like a meaningless swirl of light and dark lines. But as soon as the developed film is illuminated by another laser beam, a three-dimensional image of the original object appears. the first three-dimensionality of such image is not the only remarkable characteristic of holograms. If a hologram of a rose is cut in half and then illuminated by a laser, each half will still be found to contain the image of the rose. Indeed, even if the halves are divided again, each snippet of film will always be found to contain a smaller but intact version of the original image. Unlike normal photographs, every part of a hologram contains all of the information possessed by the whole. The whole and every part nature of a hologram provides us with an entirely new way of understanding organization and order. For most of its history, Western science has labeled under the bias that the best way to understand a physical phenomenon, whether